to come here, you would still be calling us, but from Lander.
Okay, all right. Well, I've noticed South Pass has been closed for quite a while.
Yeah, exactly.
A few days.
You'd be in a hotel room somewhere calling us, so this is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is everybody back in adjournment or back in? Or?
Yes. Yeah. We're back in session. We have our new commissioners with us. Commissioner Rawhauser, Commissioner Noble, and Commissioner Burnett are around the table along with Commissioner Bowsman and myself.
Okay. First of all, I told Mary yesterday, if we go through this and you don't feel it's complete or you'd still like to meet with me, we can do that on the 21st.
Okay. You know, Paul, your presentation is always riveting, but I think we'll probably be able to cover it.
All right. Well, so I'll try to, I'll go through this and I'm sorry I wasn't able to be there. I would have really enjoyed meeting the new commissioners. I've always enjoyed working with Commissioner Nelson and Commissioner Bowsman. And would the best be if I start going through this? And I sent some pages that have some highlights on it to point out some of the things that I wanted to cover when I'm going through this. I thought that might aid in my presentation. Also, if there's any questions, if you feel free to interrupt me, and we'll go back and cover that. I'd like to go through this, and then if possible, then the commissioner would have time to look at it, and then approve it at the meeting on the 21st, if that's okay with everyone.
Yeah, that sounds good, Paul. That would be good. And if you would like to be here in person on the 21st, that would be fine.
Okay, well, I'll leave that up to you, up to the commissioners on that, and we'll see.
Okay, thank you.
First of all, there's two things that Mary would have handed out. The first is the three-page item that I'm required to cover. This is required by governmental auditing standards, or all auditing standards. This is the required communication I need to make with the governing boards of who we audit. And this is required by my rulemaking body, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And so the best way to make sure that I document this is if I do it in writing, and I'll just take a couple minutes and just go through the first part of this.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay, the first part, I need to update a date there, but we need the first part identifies what we conducted our audit in accordance with. We are required to, the state requires that we conduct our audit in accordance with governmental auditing standards. Those governmental auditing standards require that I issue a report on your material compliance with laws and regulations that I feel are material to the financial statement, and also on accounting controls that I feel are significant and material to the preparation of the financial statements. The second paragraph goes through management's responsibility. Management's responsibility is for selecting the appropriate accounting policies. My job is to audit those policies and procedures. As I've explained in the past, and I cannot be involved in your internal control. If I do, then I have a failed audit. So I haven't completed my professional standards. The next part is we go through accounting estimates. And the two significant accounting estimates that we have there are the proportionate share of the net pension liability, which I talked about last year, and I'll cover again next year, or cover again this year. Last year we had a new accounting pronouncement, Government Accounting Standards Board 68, required the entities that participate in the Wyoming Retirement System to pick up their proportionate share of the deficit of the underfunded amount of the Wyoming Retirement System. And then depreciation is always an estimate. On the top of page 2, financial statements are particularly sensitive, and again, we go through the pension obligation, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more when I get into the financial statements. We had no difficulties in performing the audit, no corrected or uncorrected misstatements. No disagreements with management. I'm going to at the next meeting, I'll have a representation letter if you agree with the financial statements. Management, if you disagree with any of our findings, you're entitled to a second opinion. The bottom of the page, other findings and issues. A lot of times I get called on payroll questions, bookkeeping questions. Mary had some questions this year about reporting on 1099s. Each time I get a call like that, I don't run to the governing board and notify you. I think I take up way too much of your time already. And so it's kind of my discretion, any of that communication that I, bring to the governing board. On the top of the other page, top of the third page, we always like, this is just a firm preference. This is something we add. We've had some fraud issues, not at the county regarding QuickBooks, but there it is a program that's widely used, and it is used by the Fair Recreation Museum and Library, and it is a higher fraud risk program. It does allow manipulation of the data, changing. There is some safeguards within the programs, but with the audit feature, but we do like to keep people aware of the concerns over QuickBooks. The middle of the page is kind of a semantic paragraph. There's certain items in the financial statements from the footnotes forward that I have to issue an audit opinion on. The other information we only issue an in relation opinion. This is kind of an auditing procedure. It's just how the standards are written regarding supplementary information. Now, the supplementary information essentially is combined and included in the financial statements and the audited information, so I do have to essentially perform auditing procedures on that. I just do not have to issue an opinion on those. And then the bottom, this report is intended for the use of the county commissioners and management of sublet town. That's my required communication to the governing board. I don't know if there's any questions on any of that. If there is, I can answer those now, or otherwise I can start with the financial statement.
So far, so good, Paul.
Okay. I always, especially with new board members, Mary said a couple of them served on sublet number 9 as school board, so I don't quite know their familiarity with governmental financial statements, but I'd like to turn to the table of contents is right after the title page.
Okay.
Governmental financial statements essentially have three levels of reporting, which is different than a regular business entity. We have the statement of net position and the statement of activities, and that's on page 4 and 5. And these are full accrual financial statements. These include all assets, all liabilities of the county, so it's going to include the fixed assets, the long-term liabilities. It is intended to present the financial statements of the county as a business. It's going to include such items as depreciation. Governmental fund financial statements on 6 through 9 focus on spending. And so they're going to be focus on spendable resources. How did we derive what we have to spend? How was it spent? Do we have left to spend? And it's going to focus on revenue streams and restrictions. And so then the next set of financial statements are going to be on page 32 through 34. That's going to be the supplemental information. This is the unaudited information. This is going to focus on budget data. And this is essentially how the budgetary data is presented for the county commissioners and what budgets were adopted, amendments, and the budget balances. Within these three sets of financial statements, reconciliations between each set of the financial statements. So on pages 7, there's going to be a reconciliation of the two balance sheets. Page 9, there's going to be a reconciliation of the two profit and losses. And then there's also a reconciliation of the budgetary data to the spendable resource, the spendable balances. And then in supplementing those are going to be the notes to the financial statements. They're on 14 through 31. We have some schedules that are required to report the Wyoming Retirement System. They're on 38 through 40. On 41 through 44, on the top of the second page, we have some schedules that summarize some of the data that's brought forward to consolidate into the full accrual into the fund balance financial statements. And then the last item I refer to, our report on internal control and compliance and items that we feel are material to the financial statements of the county. Now, the one thing I always have to warn boards about is that to get this even into a page, a 50-some page document, there's a lot of consolidation of accounts and balances that come together to get those combined down into financial statements. Is there any questions on any of the reports or what's comprised in or the purpose of each set of financial statements there?
Not yet, Paul.
Okay. The one thing that changed this year for the county is the threshold for federal audit raised from $500,000 to $750,000. So the county federal money usually ran slightly over between $500,000 or $600,000. The primary source of that was the Forest Preserve money. FILT money is not considered federal for the reporting purposes. So the Federal Reserve, the Forest Reserve money, and then there was some TANF grants and some odds and ends, Homeland Security grants and things like that, that put the county over the $500,000 threshold. Well, beginning fiscal years 2016, the federal government changed the threshold to $750,000. So that did not put the county under this requirement for this year.
Good. Yay.
Okay. So these financial statements are not going to include those reports that were required last year. So it dropped about 5 or 6 pages out of the financial statement.
Cool.
Pages 1 through 3 is going to be our auditor's report. It goes through again my responsibility on the financial statements management. What we're reporting on, and then goes through management's responsibility for the financial statements and our auditor's responsibility. Then at the top of page 2, it goes through our opinions, and then goes through the required supplementary information again, which I'm not required to express an audit opinion on. Okay, I'll get into the financial statements now. And so I'll start on page 4 and 5. I hope on 5 that remind the landscape. I'm having some trouble with my PDF printer when I want it to landscape. It doesn't. I hope it landscaped for you. This is a full accrual financial statement. On page 4 is the balance sheet or the statement of net position. Now, I've highlighted there's the primary assets are going to be the investments and the depreciable assets. Those are the two largest balances. I've highlighted those in the assets. And the deferred outflows of resources, these are all related to the Wyoming Retirement System. And again, there's a deferred inflow of resources down at the bottom. And then 3/4 of the way, I highlighted an item, a caption, proportionate share of net pension liability for $11 million. And I talked with Commissioner Nelson and Bowsman and Latta last year about this, and I'll quickly go through this. This balance increased this year by $5,000. Last year it was less. It was about $7,000. $11 million to $6.8 million. The GASB 68 that I've referred to before requires that entities that participate in the Wyoming retirement system pick up the shortage of the Wyoming retirement system. At this point, Wyoming retirement system is about 74% funded. So it's short funded by about $2.2 billion. And so this is, that's just the PERS, the law enforcement is also short funded. And then this year you picked up participation in the volunteer EMT firefighter plan, which you did not have last year. That was a responsibility of the local districts. And so that added $1 million to this proportionate share net pension liability. And these are all detailed. I'm going to skip back. These are all detailed on page 21, right in the middle of the page. Your proportionate share, the Wyoming Retirement System publishes this data. And like I said, the public employee plan is 74% funded. The law enforcement plan is a higher percent funded. That's closer to 90%. And the Government Accounting Standards Board, in their wisdom, said there's this unfunded liability out there. So they recommended, so you go online, figure out sublet counties proportionate share these items are, and that gets dropped into your financial statements as a liability. And you participate in the plans. You participate in the public employee pension plan and the law enforcement plan and the volunteer fighter plan. And then as you can see below on the bottom of 21, there is your proportionate percentages. So your proportionate share of the public employee plan is 0.333%. So we take the 2.2 billion that they're short, multiply the probably the 0.333%, and that gives you your liability in the retirement system plan. And so, like I said, both the law enforcement plan and the public employee plan actually went backwards last year. The public employee plan went from 79% down to 74%, and the law enforcement plan I can get you the numbers on that too. That they're further back in the financial statements. The law enforcement plan. Went from 95% funded to 87% funded. So that's the full accrual balance sheet there. So the net position at the end of the year at the very bottom was $346 million. That includes all assets, and including in capital assets are road costs. That's the significant cost of the capital assets. A lot of that is road costs. Like we just put the Calpet Road on the depreciation schedule this year. That was almost $20 million for the whole cost. On page 6, going to be the statements of activities. And this is upside down income statement. It starts with the expenses for the general government. This includes depreciation, what you were able to charge for those services, grants received, net cost of activities, and then you had to supplement that with property taxes, auto fees, PILT, and so on. So the actual change in net position increased for the county increased by $21 million last year. One item that I wanted to point out, the bond market did do a recovery last year. We have been running this unrealized gain and losses. It has been running negative for quite a bit. And the market value did recover some on that, so we get to bring that back in. On the government bonds that the county holds, they're valued at market value, so that did increase through June 30th, 2016. That's the long-term financial statements included. That's the full accrual, and then on page 7, 8, and 9 are the spendable resources. And so that's going to exclude the long-term liabilities, the long-term capital assets. Just going to focus on the assets and the liabilities that are in spendable form. And then so on page 6 is the balance sheet. Page 7 is the reconciliation between the two balance sheets. And again, the big item on there is going to be the fixed assets and the long-term liabilities on the reconciliation. And this excludes depreciation now because it's only spendable resources. And then page 8 is going to be the profit and loss. And then page 9 is going to be a reconciliation of the profit loss. Note page 10, 11, and 12, since we were required to have proprietary fund financial statements, this is just going to focus on the golf course because that's the only part of the county outside the general components of the general fund that operates like a business where user charges are meant to support the activities. Page 13 is going to be just the statement that this is just funds that have been collected by the county treasurer that are due back out to the taxing entities. Page 14 starts the footnotes, and they go on for quite a while, to 31. We start note 1, description of the entity, and note 2 on page 15. Go through the summary of significant accounting policies in preparing these financial statements. And that goes on through page 20. The big footnote I've already referred to, and I've talked about briefly the pension plan. Goes through the description of the plan, benefits provided, contribution requirements on page 20. On page 21, it goes through your contributions, and then I already covered your proportionate share of the liabilities. The one thing that we have to always remember on the pension plan, it has a different measurement date. The pension plan reports on December 31st year end, and the county reports on a June 30th 2016 plan year. So we always have that window of reporting differences. On page 22, a lot of these reporting differences arrive to create these deferred outflows, which essentially is a prepaid expense, deferred inflow. The accounting pronouncement, I go back to the accounting pronouncement 68, requires that these items be amortized over 5 years, such as depreciation. And then at the top of the page, on page 22, the change in the liabilities for the plan and the net of the deferred amortization here that the county took on $1.6 million in additional pension expense. So you added, there's $1.6 million added to your expenditures due to this Wyoming Retirement System accounting.
Sure.
The one thing I always want to point out is the state is not going to turn around and make you write a check for $10 million tomorrow, but it does affect you by they're trying to make up this deficit, because it wasn't too long ago the contribution rate was only 10.5%. Now it's almost 17%. So they're trying to make up this deficit and get it fully funded. And over the past 5 years, the contribution rates to the Wyoming retirement systems went up about 70%. Have a lot of entities that are passing that additional cost on to the school to their employees, such as the school districts. Other places are making the employees pick up their part of their share, or about 50% of the contribution. And with the funding issues at the school districts, I think that's a lot of options that the school districts are looking at. On page 26, goes through the fixed asset activity. We had the one item in there, we've been carrying the Calvert Road project and some other projects in construction and progress. And once those are all completed, we rolled those down into the infrastructure, which is the roads, and into the completed buildings on the balances. So the footnote for the capital asset activity always starts with the balance additions, deletions, and then the transfers, and then the balance at the end of the year. On page 27, goes through the cash and investments. I'm going to skip ahead on some of these smaller footnotes. The note 8, I'm going to skip ahead to the note 8 on page 29. We've had a lot of entities dealing with this landfill closure cost. And so I know that what we have to do is we have to take the estimated cost of the landfill closure, and yours isn't going to close, I think, for quite a few years. Yours is one of the longer ones out that we have. I think yours is 50 years out, or 2074, I guess.
Yeah.
So it is quite a ways out. It was when Teton County was bringing landfill, it was being consumed a lot faster, but we have to estimate a liability, and I get this information from the county engineers. Of the future cost to close the landfill. And then this is amortized up to the closing cost. You've set money aside to help meet those future obligations of the landfill. I'm going to skip ahead. There's some other footnotes there, but I'm kind of running a little short here, so I'm going to skip ahead. Page 32 through 34 I referred to before. I wanted to point out this is the budget information. And so on the budget, this on page 32 is the taxes, on the revenue. We always have to have the original amended budget and the actual result. The one item that really stuck out was the sales and use taxes. The budget was $8 million, and those came in short $1.5 million. Page 33 is the total revenues. That was made up in some other areas. So, I mean, the actual revenues were slightly ahead of what was projected. And then we have the expenditures on page 33. And the one item that kind of sticks up was the road and bridge. And I know that a lot of times there's projects that are proposed and planned on and kind of get pushed back. So the road and bridge kind of made up most of the positives and the expenditures. Then on page 35 through 36, again, we have another reconciliation between the budget data, the GAAP basis financial statements. Page 37 through 38 through 40 just kind of detail some of the stuff that I've already covered on the Wyoming retirement system. This goes through the public employee plan, your covered payroll, that you made your contributions and nothing was due. The volunteer firefighter EMT plan at the bottom of the page, that was new to the county this year. We've got the same information on page 38 for the library. Then on page 39, 40, Some of this data appeared in the prior footnotes. Just go through your proportionate shares at the top, the proportionate share of the net pension in the middle, covered payroll, and then here at the bottom here on page 39, here's the funded percent. Public employee plan was 73%. The prior year was 79%. Law enforcement plan went from 95% down to 87%. And the volunteer firefighter and EMT plan is a little confusing because those two plans merged during the year. Used to be a separate volunteer fire plan and an EMT plan, and those were combined. The one thing on this is, this is all highly, this liability is so highly sensitive to the returns of the plan investments. They get an increase in the investment earnings. It really makes this deficit go away quick. But the actual contributions really don't have nearly the effect on it, the change in the stock market and everything like that. So how these amounts are configured is the county, the Wyoming Retirement System has an actuarial valuation done annually, takes the total value, the actuarial valuation of the assets versus the actuarial determination of the future benefits, and compares the two, and that's how they determine that percent. The state of Wyoming in the past is, about mediocre. They're about in the middle. Or some, I haven't looked at since last year, but I mean, when I did look, there was some that were worse, a lot worse, some that were better. So, and most pension plans do have a component, just like Social Security. Most pension plans do have a component of working individuals paying for retiree benefits. The pension plan, the PER plan, the public employee plan is so heavily dominated. Education almost, I bet, probably constitutes probably 80% of the balances. The school districts of the University of Wyoming constitute a significant portion of that plan. The one thing is, I don't want to speculate, but the state has put a lot of money into education to increase teachers' pay over the last 10 years. Well, the problem with how that affects the public employee plan is a lot of those teachers were having, prior to this money going in, were having pay go in on lower wages. Well, now with the increased salaries, their benefits have increased. So they're going to get their benefits based upon the higher years when their beginning years were contributions were at a lower rate, at a lower dollar amount. Then page 41, 42, 43, 44, details, just some combining statement. These amounts roll into the county, into the first parts of the county. The one thing, the fire board has been liquidated. I presented it here, and I could put it back into the general fund. Just there was some closed out of business collecting at the money owed from the state, from the for fighting fires and things like that. So those amounts are still segregated. So I left it as its own separate, essentially special revenue fund here. But the fire board in itself does not exist anymore. It's been liquidated. But those monies are still set aside. So there's the balance sheet on those and on the governmental activities. And then page 43 and 44, information, the same information for the library, the fair. The one joint powers board has been, the Pinedale's joint powers board has been liquidated. I don't really see any reason that the other two should not be liquidated. That's just my opinion on that. And then on page 45 through 46, report on governmental accounting standards or governmental auditing standards on internal control over reporting and compliance with other matters. Really, it was kind of a quiet year compared to what we've had in the past. We try to rotate on what we test. There, you know, I mean, everything we do is a sample. So, try to rotate. There might be one area that we don't look 1 year, but we try to pick that up the next year. And when we do our test of controls and disbursements, we're doing a sample of maybe 40 or 60 items. We're looking at the processing of the items versus the actual items. Because there's no way I could look at all the transactions that you go through. We look and see that that items are properly supported and approved and signed off by everybody and vouchered and things like that. So we're looking more at controls rather than the actual items and the processing of those items. I'm sorry.
Perfect.
Is there any questions on any of that? I know that's a lot to go through in a little under 30 or 40 minutes.
Paul, this is Joel Bousman. Just one comment, and you probably are already aware of this, but the Forest Reserve program, the Secure Rural Schools program, expired in 2015. Counties received their last payment under that program in 2016.
Okay.
And unless that's reauthorized, that'll be the end of that program, and we'll revert to the 25% revenue share, which was what was in place prior to that.
Okay. All right. I appreciate. Yeah. Well, how are you going to come out on that? Is that going to be add or?
It'll be a huge detraction. Overall, in the forest counties in the United States, it's a decrease in funding by over 80%. Serious, and it's a big issue with all the forest counties in the country. They're, of course, lobbying Congress to at least partially fund that program until we can balance it out with things like active forest management and get back to where there's some revenue to share. Right now, there's no, under the 25% rule, there's no revenue anyway. So that's where we're at.
You officially ran between $300,000 and $400,000 under that commissioner, and
I think so.
And you know, it always had to be. It was always kind of a program that, you know, I mean, it was kind of general. It just said that it could be used for roads within the county or anything like that. I mean, and you always had plenty of road expenditures to cover that. Is there going to be any restrictions on the revenue share like that, or?
If they do fund it, it would probably, unless they change the formula, it would probably remain the same. But in our case, we use the Title III portion of that money to fund our search and rescue helicopter.
And a little bit of that went to the school district. Only 15% of that, which, I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but I mean, the way in the current education funding, I mean, the schools can use whatever they can, I mean, any help they could get, so, right?
That's correct.
That's too bad that you're going to be losing that funding. And I don't think the PILT covers, you know, what it should either, but that's just my opinion, too, so.
There's also an issue of trying to get PILT fully funded, as we've been having every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, no, things are tight. And I travel the state quite a bit, and you use those. Last year you had those SLIP grants that you ran through for two of the three municipalities. I can't remember, but Marbleton or Big Piney or Pinedale. know, that's really having a big effect on a lot of our municipalities, because a lot of our cities and towns that we audit, we're using that funding for water, sewer line improvements, street improvements. I think that's what Marbleton or Big Piney did. That escapes me off the top of my head. I'd have to look back, but they were using those for water, sewer line improvements or street improvements. Now they're going to have to, since that funding source is dried up, they're going to have to come up with other ways to provide some of this funding for infrastructure repairs and things like that, which it was too bad on that. So, is there any other questions, or
gentlemen, do you have anything further for Paul?
Not right now. Lots to digest.
Yeah, lots to go through.
Lots to go through. Paul, this is Mac Rawhauser, a new commissioner. I appreciate the highlighted issues that you touched as we went through. It made it easier to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle following anything. So.
Oh well, no, these are, and I, Commissioner, you look at a financial statement for a business, it seems to make sense. And this with the three different presentations makes it extremely complex and complicated, and the reconciliations are confusing. That's why I want to make sure that I try to go through and make sure that you have at least an elementary or a basic understanding of what goes into a governmental unit's financial statement.
Well, it did help me follow along with your with what you were telling us. Thank you very much.
And like I hello?
Yep, we're still here.
Oh, okay, all right. I heard my phone died or something all of a sudden. And like I said, I mean, if you would like me to get on the phone on the 21st or be there on the 21st, please let me know. And we can make arrangements to do that. If there's more questions, if you have questions you want to address through Mary, that's fine too. I'm here to try to explain this and do the best I can to make sure that to have your understanding.
Terrific. That sounds good, Paul. We'll spend the next couple of weeks going through this and then get this adopted on the 21st.
Yeah. I bet you got everybody up there is ready for spring. It's just been, looks like I've been to Jackson and up there it just looks like it's been a long winter.
Yep. Bring it on if you have any pull.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for everybody's
time.
Thank
you, Paul.
Okay.
All right. All right, perfect. Elaine, we are ready for you. Come on up. Will you turn on the microphone there?
We got a bump, Casey.
He's not coming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Go ahead and sit in front of that microphone.
Sit in front of
right
that
there.
One?
Yeah, that'll be good.
There's a few more that might join me.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Shoveling snow, like you.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, Elaine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. I got a little script here so I don't get too crazy, but then I'm going to add stuff, of course. I just want to say good morning. And thank you for giving me the time to visit with you. I really do appreciate that. And I think this is a good time to commend you all for doing the job that encompasses being a county commissioner. After listening to that audit thing, I'm like, oh my God, I could never do that. Never do that. So I could not begin to take on the scope that involves our county roads, the gravel pits, the budgets from all our county entities, the projects, and so much more that I don't even know about. So don't think that I don't pay attention. I appreciate it. It's a thankless job, I'll bet. These tasks are all accomplished with accurate information while considering the concerns and interests of all the people, you know, the citizens of Sublette County. All this helps you to make good decisions for us. One of your most important jobs, as I believe, is to protect the health and environment of Sublette County citizens. So you can guess why I'm here. I think I sent you all a packet, and it's old, it's research, but it's new research, you know, and it's scientific. Working off the health part, our children, grandchildren, and now I can even think about great-grandchildren, are worth this protection. And our Western way of life, I think, is worth it, too. This protection requires much work and forethought. We must keep ourselves educated and connected to accurate information. Now, I do not claim to be a research scientist. I'm just a retired science teacher that happens to have 2 degrees in science. And this kind of thing is right up my alley. And I have, you know, a lot of passion for what goes on in our air and our water and the environment. But I do know how to conduct research, and I know how to ask questions and hang in there, you know, until I feel like I've got the right answer. It's discouraging to me that some of you may still hold on to the idea that our forest, Yellowstone Park, and forest fires are contributing causes of our high levels of wintertime ground level ozone formation up here in the Green River Basin. Making trees in our park the scapegoat is just not true. It's outdated and it's scientifically been disproved. I send you all a packet on this research and regarding this theory. I hope you've had time to read it, but to clarify for you, to summarize, to be a good teacher, sorry, you'll have to suffer through this. I guess here are the main facts in case it didn't work for you. Trees do not produce ozone. Some species of trees, mainly broadleaf, oak, gum trees, give off some, they're called volatile organic compounds, and I'm going to refer to them as VOCs because you probably have heard it. Conifers also emit VOCs, you know, the little pine needle things, and also willows, but it, to a much smaller degree. They've done a lot of studies. It really requires a lot of high heat and moisture. I think it was very interesting. Places such as the Great Smoky Mountains and the Blue Mountains of Australia, which I had the opportunity to visit. I've seen both. They're really aptly named because they just have that blue haze going on from the VOCs. But there's no ozone there, and there's a reason for that. In order for ozone to form, you have to have nitrogen oxide, NOx, we call it. And I know you probably all know this, but I'm just making sure. It has to be in the air to combine with the VOX in order to form ground-level ozone. There's other things that have to be in place, too. But these two things are called precursors. Just so you know, all living things give off VOX of one sort or another, or precursors, you could say. But they don't give off ozone, thankfully. Trees do not emit NOx. Let me say that again. Trees do not make ozone, nor do they emit or give off nitrogen oxide. They give off VOX, volatile organic fume-like things. NOx is made from man-made emissions. It's caused by the burning of fossil fuels, natural gas, oil, and coal. Like about 60% comes from emissions from cars and exhausts and so forth. They're hydrocarbons that are byproducts of oil and gas development. NOx is a man-made pollutant, and it's a family of poisonous, very highly reactive gases. When combined with VOX, it can form ozone, not always, but it can. And when it does, it's a highly toxic pollutant that's very harmful to human lungs and other things, including agriculture. Winter ozone formation requires not only both precursors, the NOx and the VOX, but special weather conditions such as heavy snow pack, a bright sunny day with reflected sunlight in order to form this chemical synergy of ozone. This is what we have this year. It is no surprise, but it's very discouraging. Nevertheless, since we've all, I know Joel, you were on it, I was on it, Carmel was on it, Dave Hull was on it, the task force, and we did all those recommendations to cut emissions. That was our task. Our task, placed by the governor on us, was to find ways to reduce emissions so we didn't have this terrible ozone. And yet we are right back in it because we have that snowpack and we've had sunlight days. So here we go. Blaming our forests and the parks and forest fires on our high ozone levels is an attempt, I believe, to deflect attention from the major elephant in the room, oil and gas production and all its emissions. It is the point source production of our ozone. We definitely have more work to do. I can't presume to tell industry what to do. I tried, but they're way smarter than me. And, you know, I've gotten up at night and I've read, okay, look, this dehydrator doesn't have a monitor on it. Oh, look, we need to add more, you know, I need to be up on these tier levels of these, you know, all the engines and so forth. And to the point where I thought, you know what, this is crazy. This is totally nuts. No, I'm a citizen. And my real thought is I only hope that you'll support my concerns. I don't want to tell industry what to do. I want them to do what is necessary, whatever it takes to reduce our emissions. And maybe, you know, they're working on it, I'm sure, because I don't think they like everybody breathing down their neck about it. However, it is happening. And when health takes over precedence from profits, that's wrong. And I hope you guys back me on that, whatever it takes, that you do whatever effort, whatever you have in your armory to help that to take place to reduce these emissions. We just can't have that anymore. We've worked too darn hard. And this is too beautiful a place to have bad air. So that's basically all I have to say.
Yeah, perfect.
But thank you.
We do appreciate that. And just on behalf of the commission, we'll do everything within our power.
That's all you can do.
Right.
And that's what I expect.
Right.
I expected hope to hear that.
Do you get any feedback from DEQ when you contact them?
There's a lady that's going to talk about that. We have had numerous conversations lately.
Okay.
So that'll be something somebody else can... I'm the crank teacher here.
Yeah, you're great. Okay.
But
Is there going to be a number of people talking today,
two
Elaine?
Two or three, I think. Is that okay?
Can you move right along? That'd be
I'm
great.
I'm done.
Okay.
You want
Thank
this?
Thank you. Yes, please.
I scribbled something at
Thank
the
you.
End, but...
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I
yes,
have
go ahead.
What?
Comment for Elaine.
Oh, sure.
I was afraid you would take my email comment wrong. I hope you didn't.
Well, I tried to do it in good faith.
I never meant to imply that trees are the result of the ozone we're having right now. What I did say, and it is research, I learned this from DEQ back when we were on that task force, that the actual ozone level in Yellowstone Park has been elevated, and it was not attributed to Sublette County industry. It's upwind. And I haven't yet had time to read your research. Maybe it,
You're
maybe
love
it
these.
Says how that happened.
You're going to love these.
Okay, good. But anyway, I never meant to imply that Yellowstone Park is responsible for our ozone.
Well, I just thought I had to do a little teacher checking up here.
Well, I appreciate the refresher course
but I'm,
of NOx and
so bear with
VOCs.
Me.
And it's nothing that maybe the new commissioners...
Needs a, I don't know.
Need that update.
But these
on
are, this is pretty good. This kind of gives you the feel. Yeah, there is, like I said, all living things give off NOx, but they don't all living things give off NOx. And there's your
That's true.
Bing.
So where, the question I've always had, where did the NOx come from in Yellowstone Park in the middle of the winter that makes ozone?
There was no NOx.
Because, well, then how do you get ozone? You're true in your statement. Trees don't put out ozone. They put out VOCs. And in order to get ozone...
It has to be emissions.
It has to combine...
It could be wind.
With NOx. And
the
so
wind.
That NOx has to come from somewhere.
Good questions. Good questions.
You know, maybe it...
Yeah.
Some
of the volcanic
activity. I don't know that DQ can answer that question.
I don't either.
All I know is it didn't come from a drilling rig out on the Jonah Field.
Well, I know that
ozone in the Yellowstone
I hate
water.
To take anybody else's time, but I do know that Robert Fields, when he did that mobile monitoring,
That's correct.
He did see the swirling of the gases and up into the winter, into the Wyoming range, it carries, it carries, which is shocking to me, but it does. It goes on patterns, and it somehow goes like this. So I like I told you, I am not a scientist. Right. Big difference.
Well, there's still things to learn about it, and there's still DEQ, I would imagine, is going to have their hands full.
You got, well, did you ever get
working
these?
Working with industry to figure out what the next step is.
Absolutely.
Do you also,
thank you, Elaine.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll recognize the next person in line. Come on up to the microphone, please.
I'm glad I'm too old to be your student.
Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Dottie Bentley, and have been in and out of Sublette County since 1928. Elaine has thanked you. I'm going to hitchhike on hers. We are very grateful for some time to spend with you. Mine's going to be short, so I will let you pass these out. Elaine referred to a conversation that we recently had with Nancy Bear of the DEQ and Darla Potter. And again, I'm going to read in the interest of time. Pardon me for reading. The first figure I gave to you guys, and I know this is really familiar to lots of you, is the Wyoming VisNet website where you can get real-time data. I'm sure you're aware of that. I put that there to distinguish that from the what they call the... I can't remember the name of the program, an additional set of monitors. So I just wanted to make that distinction. That's a little bit new to me as well. So during that conversation, we learned a few things. It's called MesaNet, by the way. We were told by the DEQ that these canisters, these aren't these, you know, real-time, this additional program, the canisters, we were told, cost about $100,000 to put out. And so we understand that there's some expense there and some budget cuts coming. What was concerning to me during that phone call is that they are using data starting at 2005 forward. And so in my mind, you know, I think if we went with that model, 10 years of data, what if we had 3 or 4 winters with very little snowpack? My worry is that the DEQ will continue to model based on that. Going back to 2005 isn't enough data. I suspect you gentlemen have been here longer than I have. I don't think this snow, this depth might be anomalous. But my worry is that the DEQ will continue to model based on the fact that we have 30 or 40% no snowpack. I disagree. Also wanted to point out that we recently had the Senior Winter Games here in up at White Pine. And it, I know it's anecdotal, but unless you're up there hearing some of the questions, you know, I heard somebody ski past a guy at the CC ponds who had Kleenexes stuffed up his nose because his nose is bleeding. There were some anecdotal questions asked of local citizens. What's going on here? My eyes are itching. Somebody that I know worked out at the Boulder State Post Office one of the days that we hit a high ozone was very sick from it. So... I know you guys have a busy day. I would urge the county commissioners to review this data. What I haven't, lucky for you guys, I don't have the data yet from University of Wyoming that will really quantify that snowpack in the past 10 years. I will email you that. I will also email you a PDF to this report. And would urge you, I don't know how much our county commissioners can do, but maybe let our governor know that, you know, we're concerned. And again, I'm with Elaine. I'm not surprised we're having ozone this year at all.
Yeah. I don't think any of us are.
Thank you. I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you.
So, right, you know, again, I'm not an atmospheric science. I was an exploration geologist in coal and uranium. I'm not from Earth First. I was a STEM teacher. So, again, not, you know, I'm not an atmospheric guy, but I would urge you to at least, you know, make sure that we're protecting our future here. Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bentley. Thank you very much. Who did you have else? Who else? Tom, go ahead.
For those that you don't know me, I'm Tom Curry. For those that you do, I don't need to introduce myself again. But I had some more things to say, but I don't have as much to say. But my primary concern is the health and the risks from ozone and the Boulder receptor, which usually has the highest level, is on a knob on an antenna about 50 feet in the air. And ozone occurs in with the snow and inversion situations, and it's heavier than the other stuff, and it settles down. I've been there at the Boulder Cemetery where you can look over there, and it's just a blue-green din is down along the river. And what I know happens down along the river, there's a lot of people that work for the oil field down there. And the levels of ozone have probably got to be a lot higher in that area than they do. And people come in and have problems at the clinic, and they just get, nobody tells you that they're having problems from ozone, but that's what is happening. And I know that occurs in high-density areas. We saw that gentleman that did the study traveling around could verify that data. So the sources of that are basically hydrocarbons leaking into the air and burning of hydrocarbons. That's the NOx comes from burning, and VOCs comes from evaporation, the combination, plus the sun activating the molecules, gets it together and does what it does. You know more about that than I do, sir. Maybe. Well, you should. If you don't, educate yourself and me too, because I could use the help. Anyhow, that's the primary concern that I have, and the animals can't speak for themselves. Their infants have had problems with breathing. They're not supposed to be in high ozone levels. That's the primary concern we have, and anything we can work with the DEQ or the BLM to encourage leak reduction and source reduction would be the best thing. Now, I thought it would make a big difference when they changed those drill rigs over, reduce the input from 77 tons a year down to 3 or something like that, isn't that right? Mm-hmm. And they're still drilling with high-quality drill rigs, but the source of the emissions is still there when the situation is right. So, I mean, so there's some leaks going on. You know, trucks haul, tanks get open, and stuff flies out, and it flares wells and stuff like that. It all leads to the source. So whatever those that we can work with the DEQ and the Oil and Gas Commission, Bureau of Land Management, to coordinate efforts to tighten that down better, it would be better. I know we have steps in place. I just don't think they're adequate for this time of year. Basically, that's all I have.
Thanks,
to
Colin.
Say.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Colin, very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Kerr. Did anyone else like the opportunity to speak? Carmel, come on up, please.
I'm going to get the bum's rush.
Sorry, was it supposed to be done at 11:30?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You go ahead.
Okay. So, I wanted to just echo what Tom was saying. What we're going to hear ultimately is that there were probably not very many exceedances. Exceedances are based on a 1 hour or an 8 hour. We've had a number of days where for 5 hours it was really pretty darn high. But it drops precipitously because of what's going on with our chemistry here, whatever. Right. So the 8 hour average is showing up at like right under the thing, even right. though the 1 hours that everybody was breathing for 5 hours was quite high. Right. So I guess.
Are you aware of any 8 hour exceedances?
Yes.
How many?
Four?
I don't know. I think Saturday everything in the county got one.
We got an email from Darla.
Oh, really? Well, good, because we're not hearing anything.
Are there five? No, but it wasn't recent.
What's that?
I think the one in January.
There were two in January.
Okay. Two. There was six testings at five sites, or 30 tests, I think, and two of them exceeded that. But that was January.
Okay. And I think there were a couple three
so
in February. And
there's
then
probably been about four. Is that what
you're
least. Thinking?
I think there's at least six.
What's that?
I've been trying to keep track. I think four, but maybe five.
I'm thinking at least six,
okay.
But anyway.
Not neither here nor there. Go ahead.
That would be good. But anyways, I guess what I'm saying is that even though they're going to say, oh, well, there's been six and, you know, you really don't need to worry and all that, I think that Tom's point about, you know, where that monitor is not where anybody is breathing. Where people are breathing are down in the town of Boulder, down in the well field, and it's not just ozone, it's everything else that goes with it. So when they tell you there's only six, just say the exposure of your people is 50 million times higher. Don't believe it.
Okay.
I guess I wanted to just sort of end up with saying this is kind of... Okay. So as you know, Sublette County's had these ozone things 2005, 6, 8, 11, and 16. So it's not just the last year.
Right.
Our ozone forms only under conditions of widespread plentiful snow and temperature inversions. However, we do not control the weather, and we don't need to keep talking about control of the weather.
Sure.
It won't do any good, really.
So it has been concluded by default, and I think by all of us too, but also nearly a decade ago by DEQ, that the best thing to do is to reduce the local precursor air pollution emissions. Quite a bit has already been done to do this in the Upper Green River Basin since the 2008. And it has been ongoing over a period of time. In fact, the latest requirements even just came into effect in 2016. It takes one heck of a long time for these guys, even after they decide they're going to do something about the rule for existing sources, to get anywhere.
Right.
But anyways, they're all in by this January, and so the thought was we're done. But this year the snow came, so we're not done. Some people thought we were done. A lot of us didn't think we were done. But anyway, so I think that's
been
proved.
Some of us hoped we were done.
We all hoped.
We all hoped we were done.
Right there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as plainly evidenced, those reductions were not enough. For any significant steps to be taken on this issue, strong direction or support is needed from the governor's office. Regarding air quality, primacy lies wholly with the state. You may remember recently the BLM methane rule, in which the BLM was trying to regulate air pollution from federal facilities with federal gas leaking into the air. But anyways, Wyoming is challenging that rule because they don't want the BLM to be involved. They want the state to handle it. So it's all about the state, and it's all about the governor who's challenging that, among other things. I have recently been in contact with Governor Mead's office about this, expressing concern and encouraging them, similar to this. Because of your much greater connections and influence, admit it, I request that you do the same on behalf of the people of Sublette County.
Thank you.
Thank you for your consideration.
You bet. Absolutely. As I said before, Carmel, we will do everything within our power.
Thank you much.
Yeah. Thank
All
you.
Of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, one question.
Go ahead.
Has anybody heard when the next, is the DEQ scheduled their next meeting? I have not been aware of it, if they have. But I expect there'll be a lot of attention on it when that occurs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, keep us.
Say one.
Go ahead, Albert. I've got Albert first, and then I'll get you, Tom.
I haven't kept up well, though Carmel's kind of kept me up to speed a little bit during the session. So I have kept after DEQ to keep me contacted on what they do and when they do it and what the exceedances are. So
okay.
I'll continue to engage them to get information.
And if you have some information you can pass on to us, just hit the forward button.
I'll do it.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Albert.
Pass it on to the newspaper.
Go ahead, Tom.
One of the things that DEQ did in a meeting we attended a couple, 3 years ago, they authorized ExxonMobil to continue binning 500 tons per year of VOCs to the atmosphere because it was basically for another 30 years, like they had been doing, their whole mitigation measure was to have somebody drive to the wellhead and watch them vent to the atmosphere, which just puts another truck in the air for NOx. But anyway, the DEQ has not a very good track record actually sitting down and doing their job on this stuff. And I just think it's important to know that they need to be pressured, and you guys are the pressure we need.
You bet. Noted. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. Excellent. Perfect. Thank you for your help and your concern, and we're on it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mac, right. Would you grab thank those?
Sure.
Bills.
Yeah. Let's get those bills paid real quick.
Take a bathroom break.
Yeah. Yep. Go ahead and take a bathroom break.
I beg your pardon. You've turned over a new leaf. Oh, God. You want to catch your own cat's ass.
Mary, do you have some things for us? Can you do it while we're
many
paying bills?
Oh, yes. And.
Can you make schedules and his skin.
No problem.
That poor auditor sounded distraught.
Well, he's
is he still in South Pass in the snow or something?
Well, no, he's in Casper. He worked all day yesterday. He was supposed to be here at Kansas.
Did you have something for the commission, or you're just here listening?
Let me tell you what he's here about.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Mary's about to cover that.
I'll tell you.
Or do you want to wait till these guys get here?
Yeah, we want. Remember, right. Justin came and made a presentation, yep. And he is wondering, you guys had taken it under advisement,
mm-hmm.
And he's wondering what your decision is.
Gotcha.
So,
well,
that's
okay,
what
I'm
we're
also here if you had any questions.
And if
okay.
If I can have like 10 seconds when I
come on up here as soon as these other guys get here. If you don't mind, we're stamping bills. And we can multitask. But we'll wait till these other guys
yeah.
get here.
Looks like a good time.
Tons. You're going to multitask.
Okay, that sounds good. Got some things for me. Okay.
The mini mob for what kind of fire?
Gotcha.
Can you see them coming in or something?
No example. I guess. I overheard that Mary say that or
what's up?
In case he's not coming.
Yeah, in case he's not coming, he didn't have anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can pile him up on you.
I don't have time to wait on you.
Really? There's too many committees to take care of, do you?
Thank you, Mac.
I feel better.
All right. Gentleman Justin was here some couple of weeks ago about Aflac Insurance.
New York Life.
Sorry.
Aflac.
Yes.
My bad.
Right.
I had a duck on the mind. Sorry.
It's all good.
Yeah. New York Life Insurance. Whole life insurance, right?
Whole life, and then we right. briefly discussed the...
He was here with Jay, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I meant to be here 2 weeks ago to talk to you guys. I ended up getting stuck in Casper. Imagine that.
Yeah.
But I told you guys last time that we would submit a bid for you guys, and we ended up delaying that, and I wanted to talk to you last week or 2 weeks ago about that because New York Life has offered that if you do want to move forward with that EWO program, that if we submit both inquiries at the same time, they'll offer an additional 3-5% off that group life rate. And so we just wanted to give that opportunity before we move forward on that. And so if it doesn't affect the decision at all, that's fine, but I wanted to be able to throw that in there. So.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I'll go ahead and start here, gentlemen. In an attitude, Justin, of declining revenues and such like that, I'm not sure that I'm inclined to add another policy to the county. I'm going to allow everybody there an opportunity to talk to this, but I think that's kind of where I'm at with it. Go ahead, gentlemen, anybody jump in.
Can I speak?
Go ahead, Mary.
Justin's proposal would be a voluntary participation by the employees.
Right. It wouldn't cost us
anything.
Right.
Except the only thing that we would be committed to would be administration.
Right.
So just so you understand that we aren't adding another benefit to the employees, it would be an optional participation.
So as far as the administration goes, what would it cost us to administer this?
We're talking payroll deduction, I would imagine. We're paying a premium to a company. You would basically manage the participants.
Yes,
I mean, and deal with the participants. We have some paperwork. We have the same thing right now with some other optional. We've got some other, like, we've got AFLAC. So, you know, if they want to participate in
AFLAC. That's where I come up with AFLAC.
Yeah, we got AFLAC.
Okay, so we do the same thing with AFLAC.
Yeah.
We have an agent, we're the administrator.
Yeah.
What is that?
They come and do a open enrollment kind of thing.
What does that cost us to do that? Any idea? I mean,
a little bit of time. I can't really put a number on it. I mean, it pretty much a lot of it's done mechanically through our computer system. We generate a check, we mail it off.
Why not leave enough room for you guys?
Well, if you're telling me it's not that big of a undertaking for the county, is that what you're telling me?
Not really that big of a deal. And the other thing too that I think Justin is talking about is that he wants to place a bid for our other insurance as well.
Yes, sir.
Well, and I would welcome that.
Right. And we had already discussed that, and we will put that in New York Life once that's approved.
Yeah.
Said they'll get it turned around in a week, sure, or less.
Okay.
They said generally it's 2 days, depending on how many they get all at once. So.
Sure. Okay.
So. Well, I don't have a problem with the program of voluntary enrollment,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's not an excessive burden. On you
to administer
in terms of administering.
Yeah, because that's the only cost that the county's going to face is just the administration of that. So
and plus what you're saying, if we do that and then you want to look at our overall insurance,
mm-hmm.
considering this other program, there might be an additional 3-5% reduction to us. So there may be some cost savings there.
Sure.
And I would definitely myself push New York Life to they promised to match or beat any price, but I will definitely push to beat it.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, because I don't think match is going to get
no,
it.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So
beat's going to get it.
And I will definitely tell them that.
Okay, that's
so
we'll have some work up front. We need to provide some information to Justin.
So I would probably need 20 minutes, half hour with Mary. Just to get the general information on what you guys already implement for your life insurance, so that way we can get that bid done. A lot of that same information will go, because we'll submit an inquiry to New York Life that they'll make sure that they want to insure you. You know, that's them taking on a risk. Basically, education and government has been our easiest one to push through, because you guys have pretty safe jobs. You're not... Like, we don't insure oil fields.
Right. So do we offer this?
We have a life insurance piece that goes with our health insurance.
Okay.
So he's not bidding on our health insurance.
Right.
He's only bidding on life insurance.
Right. But we do have a life insurance.
Yeah,
it's term, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
his term.
It's term life. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I got
go ahead.
A question, I guess. So in this case, if we take a deduction from employees' pay for whole life, then that employee leaves.
It goes with them.
Then it is either they got to cash it out or they have to keep paying the premiums
to maintain it.
It's different than term that way.
Right.
If an employee leaves with term insurance
it's gone.
It's gone.
Right.
That's it. So would this be something, would there be any benefit to putting something in with the employees paid just to get some feedback of how many might be interested?
Well, that might be a place to start.
I'm thinking before maybe it would be a good idea to get some feedback on how many might be interested.
And I would do a lot of that for you.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about.
They would need to understand that when their employment ends or they retire, they're
going
to have to start picking those premiums up.
Yeah.
They need to understand that.
Mr. Chairman, that might be a good place to start is to just throw out an inquiry
mm-hmm.
to the employees and say, would anybody be interested in this?
That was going to be my question is that do you ever get together with the maintenance people or the road and bridge or when they all come together for a little dog and pony show, so to speak? Could we do it that way? Or would it be easier to, like you said, put it in with their... check or however
it'd be easy.
Works.
It'd probably be easiest to have Justin gin up a letter and we could put it in our payroll and have them respond to us.
We also have like an email blast if you want to do something like that.
We can do that as well.
Okay, I'm okay
curious
with
to
that.
See what the results were on
right.
Employees.
You know, generally we see about a 10 to 25% participation rate in these kinds of things. So
I'd be all right with that.
You know, sometimes it's higher. We've had as high as 75% participation in these. We actually have like a 60% participation in Nebraska right now. We have an agent, so part of our agency is over the borderline of Nebraska. And Chatterton County is currently working with us.
Dawes County. So,
is it Dawes County?
Dawes County. Okay.
Don't tell a Nebraska guy.
Yeah, it's Dawes County.
It's the only thing he learned when he went to college. Though.
Don't get him stirred up for him.
It's called Harvard of the West.
I guess I should know that. Nebraska. My mom went to school in Chatterton. So.
Harvard of the West. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, that sounds like that's a good way to go, Justin.
Okay, so if it's all right with you,
get with Mary.
I'll get with Mary, and we'll start moving the process forward and see where we go.
Perfect.
Okay.
That sounds good. Thank you.
All right, well, I appreciate it.
You bet. Anytime.
Thank you for your time.
You bet.
Mr. Chairman, I got just a couple more things. We received a letter from the Forest Service. This is a stakeholder letter. They are interested in hearing comments on proposals to offer two rental cabins to the public, and you've probably seen this other places, in 2018, so not this summer, next summer. It would be the two historical guard stations, one which is at for each of the districts. One is the lodge at Green River Lakes. The other is the Sherman Guard Station, which is up at the end of the oil Denver. Yeah. I don't know if you have any, if you want to make any comments, if you care.
You know,
I don't care. What,
yeah, no,
no objection.
Rob, do we need to respond in some way?
No, it's just like opportunity for feedback.
Right. No.
Send that rock letter back to him.
Send the rock letter
rock
back.
Rock paper.
Cabin. Say, here we go. This is our comment.
This is our comment.
Yeah.
Our comment is we want to book it.
Along the same line, we had this for you at your last meeting, and this is the Boulder Travel Management Plan. And it is the 15th. MOU.
Is that meeting?
Yeah. Well, it's the 15th is when the meeting is. But this is the MOU for the county to be a cooperating agency in
Matt,
that process.
Did you notice how these...
And we had it reviewed by Matt Gaffney's reviewed it, as well as Gregory Cowan at the Commissioners Association. And everybody's fine. And I think Joe sent you didn't you send an email off to everybody talking about this?
Yeah, we just need to formally. Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the MOU with BLM for Cooperative Agency on the Boulder Travel Management Plan.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded that we accept the MOU regarding the Boulder landscape to be cooperative.
I haven't looked in a while, Larry. Does it, we have to designate a point? Person for
a point guy?
Probably. Most of them do. But it's been so long since I looked at it.
Tom, huh?
Have Mac volunteer for that?
Yeah.
I'll volunteer.
I was going to appoint Commissioner Bowser.
I know it.
There is a motion.
There's
a motion on the table to accept the MOU. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, in regards to that, we did have a pretty intense discussion for a few days as to whether or not BLM would release the names and addresses of those permittees involved to the county. I was first told no, and then I talked to some people, and then
we got the names. So it was, good. They got it resolved. And those letters did
go
out.
They have gone out.
They went out. Yeah.
Perfect.
Well, and there's been a lot of notice about this. We received another letter. The county did, inviting the county to the meeting. I've noticed that there's stuff in the papers and whatever. Two times, and yes, it does ask for a representative and a backup.
Here? Okay. So, representative will be Commissioner Bowsman. How about Commissioner Rawhauser as a backup?
Backup guy.
Perfect.
Okay.
Now, is that to the trip to Hawaii, or what? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
All expense paid trip to the
Boulder Community Center.
And you still don't get a credit card.
Yeah, no credit card.
And you don't get a credit card.
And you don't get a credit card.
No credit card, trip to Boulder, Wyoming. You are a lucky man.
No fishing, no hunting. If you need an elk, you might call Game and Fish. They might load your truck.
They still have elk out there?
They're still taking care of the ones that are in with cattle.
Christy, what was Mike's training on?
I don't know.
What's your what?
Telephones.
Are they
still
hunting?
He doesn't do telephones. They're not hunting them, but if they're female elk and they're in with cattle, they're removing them and they're giving the meat away.
I have a contract. Get you back on track here. I have a contract that would be between us, between Sublette County and Rhonda McLaughlin. Rhonda is the gal that is running the clubhouse at the golf course. And the golf committee has reviewed this. This contract was prepared by MAP, and it would be for would take us through October of 2017.
Okay. Anyone care to make a motion to renew the contract? Second?
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded to approve the contract with Rhonda McLaughlin for the golf course clubhouse. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
I received an email from Lorraine Gaffke at the Rural Healthcare District concerning there's a trailer that's on the property over there that used to be used for housing locums, and then it was a few years ago they asked if it was possible for them to use it for daycare for the employees. Mm-hmm. And now the trailer, they don't have that many employees that have children to support that daycare effort. And they're wondering if, but there is someone that's doing daycare in the community that's inquired if they could enter into an agreement.
Oh, using that trailer?
To use the trailer to do daycare. I don't know if you guys want to get into that. It would be in conflict with private enterprise, with somebody else out in the community that might have a spot to do that.
At the next meeting.
Yeah. So I don't, you know.
The county put money into refurbishing that trailer, too. So.
We did. We put carpet. We did. We refurbished.
Carpet and roof.
We refurbished so that we would be in compliance with the state for it to be a daycare.
I don't know that we want to get into that, gentlemen, but I will. I'm open. I will keep my mind open.
I don't want to compete with private industry.
They would be
enough already.
Right. They would be renting the facility from the county, so the county would be receiving rent or something like that. So.
I guess unless we could get a letter from all the other daycares that it didn't bother them, they're currently maybe that might. This is going to be a mess.
I don't even know that we need to go that direction.
No, I think it bothered some of the business when the healthcare district did it.
Well, I'm sure.
In terms of competition. I don't know what they ought to be They rent it. We own it. They use it.
Yeah.
They were using it.
Yeah.
Now they want our permission to lease it out to somebody else for daycare?
Yeah. I mean, leasing it out should
without
be
being more familiar with the property, is it an option? Would you sell it?
No.
No?
Okay. It's part of our campus down
well,
there.
Quite okay.
Yeah, but it's a mobile home.
But
anyway,
wouldn't it be better served and used if we needed it or if they needed it for new incoming employees that needed housing? Go back to the original
purpose.
Go back
purpose. To the locum housing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just let it sit.
You can take no action on the request if you'd like to, or you can say no, whatever you.
No.
I would say no. Any other thoughts on that, gentlemen?
No. No.
Okay. Do you have anything else, Mary?
We've got a couple, two or three vouchers here
okay.
that I don't need to talk to you about. I just need to slide them through.
Okay.
That's it.
Commissioner Rawhauser, you want to start full business?
A couple days ago, the chairman, the Nelson and I met with the Sublet Center to just have a informational meeting with them, and it was at their request. And it was a very informative meeting. I think the thing that they were giddy about and very excited about, they had just gone through the Center for Medicare and Medicaid survey, and they had done very, very well. And they got all the kudos from that organization. So they were moving forward. They had lots of plans, which they really didn't share with us because we didn't stay for the entire meeting. But it was a good meeting, and they're moving forward with what they've got going at the Sublet Center. I had a phone call into Jay at the fairgrounds to see if there were any concerns or anything going on, and he did not get back to me, but I left the voicemail saying, you don't need to. If you don't have any problems.
No news is good news.
No news is good news.
You bet.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's all.
Thank you. Commissioner Noble?
I don't have a lot to bring forward. Went to the town council meeting. That was about the economic development as much as the critical access hospital. I think Stephen, good job presenting that in the paper. So that's about all I have.
Terrific. Commissioner Burnett?
Commissioner Noble and I did attend a meet and greet interview, whatever, involved with the only candidate thus far for the Rural Healthcare District position of administrator. This morning, before our meeting, Mr. Rawhauser and I met with Mr. Crane from the newspaper with the topic of our spirit of cooperation moving towards the perception of improved transparency, which I think we're all willing to do. The recommendation, and we've done it, or not, is to any potential meetings that we have where we're together, we will give due notice. We've done that with the morning meetings. The suggestion would be that we do that with our lunch meetings. And that we clarify, like with various meetings, you appoint two people so we don't end up inadvertently having a quorum.
Yeah.
But it was a positive move in the right direction on the spirit of cooperation in that regard.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick comment on that, just to make sure that it is noted that lunchtime is not a meeting.
I understand.
Yeah, but you said lunch meeting.
Well, I'm sorry.
So, no,
but
I
when
just
we, I guess my, what I clarify,
just clarifying that.
When we have lunch, if we're going to have lunch together, just like breakfast,
sure.
I think in that right spirit, we would announce that we're having lunch.
Put it in there, Mary.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Thanks for the clarification.
Because we're going to have lunch. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway.
Maybe on that same note, at the end of the meeting, we can kind of go over which meetings we're all going to attend and make sure there's not two or more of us.
No
there.
Duplicates?
Yeah. Okay. So we don't have that problem.
Sounds good. Thank you. Anything further?
No.
Commissioner Burnett?
No,
thank you. Commissioner Brown?
So,
I spent 8 days in D.C.
Ooh, you poor bugger.
And I was hoping to get a written report out to everybody for the day. I didn't get it done. I'll do it by email, and I'll copy Mr. Crane when I do that.
Perfect.
We had a tremendous amount of hopefully productive meetings, a coalition between the western counties and the western governors. Had a whole series all day, one day, starting at 7 in the morning till reception at night in the Canadian Embassy. We went all day long.
Wow.
From one to the next.
Good. And, got some good stuff accomplished.
Well, yeah, perhaps. But if you read Fox News, it's such a mess back there. You don't know what's going to.
Yeah.
Don't know what it means.
Did you meet Secretary Zink?
No. He got confirmed. The last day I came home Thursday, he got confirmed Wednesday morning at 10:30, and by 1 o'clock that day, we did have a meeting with his chief of staff, which would not have happened if he hadn't been confirmed, but it was pretty encouraging.
Good.
Really.
Excellent.
Well, Commissioner Bousman, thank you for your time and efforts and energy on that.
Thank you.
Anything further, Commissioner Bousman?
That's all I've got, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Then I have nothing to report, gentlemen. Representative Summers, do you have anything further for us?
No, if you guys had any questions from the session, I would
go ahead and take that.
I don't know if you guys are going to lunch, I was just going to go to lunch with Joel. I just wanted to catch up on cow stuff.
Cow stuff with Joel.
But,
okay.
No, I mean, it was a tough budget session. We cut everything. You know, I probably made everybody in the world mad on appropriations, but you understand that. You appropriate every year. So.
Yep,
yes.
It's not going to be easy. The school day is going to get worse before it gets better. There's not a recognition, I think, down there that we have to solve the problem immediately. And so, until we tip over the cliff on education, I don't think we'll really resolve it. We'll see this summer, I guess.
Right.
I lost track. So where's that House Bill
242
at?
Is it true that it's on the School District 19
it came out
instead of going on?
That hasn't happened yet.
Not yet. You know, the kids handle it within 2 days.
Question for Albert on education.
Parents would.
No.
Albert, can you clarify there was information in the papers about the court actually determines the level of funding for education, and then there was further discussion that when the money's not there, how do you fund something that the court says you have to fund when you don't have the money? What's the deal there?
That's just what happens.
So what happened is we passed a bill, House Bill 236, which was amended in the Senate to remove basically any revenue source, and actually remove one of the diversions that we created in the House. And I, in the end, didn't vote for 236, though it passed. And so what it did is it made $34 million in cuts to education. It backs up any shortfall in education with the LISRA, which is the state's rainy day account. It, in a separate bill, we guarantee the 5% spending policy out of our permanent school foundation accounts, the common school land account, which is the permanent mineral trust fund. So as the income flows out of that, we're going to guarantee 5%. Even if we don't get it, it'll have to be guaranteed, which would be, if we don't need it, out of the LISRA again. So we have that going on. That committee was established, which will look at a new funding model for education. So there'll be an RFP that'll go out to get new consultants to develop a new model for school funding. That RFP hasn't been written, and probably from a educator standpoint, the most critical thing will be how that RFP is written, frankly, in my opinion, and what that RFP says and what we ask for. Ultimately, I think I've just made a glance at the last RFP written. It'll have to have some of those things in there. I would suggest that it includes those you know, Supreme Court decisions on education. So going forward, we get a new model, whatever that new model is, and I would assume that that would mean we will have to fund at that level, whatever that level comes to be after, and then we'll have to debate it in the legislature, because the funding model is ultimately adopted by the legislature, so it's not, no committee controls that. And so then that has to be debated on the floor and accepted or not accepted. And then whatever final product comes out of that, we will know at what basis we have to fund education going forward. And then from there, we'll have to make decisions on how to fund it. So on the current model, we're $400 million in the hole by 2022. That will be a little less because we made some cuts, $34 million in cuts that are above what was made a year ago, where the projections were based upon. But 34 from 400 doesn't get you very far.
So. Representative Summers, what happened to the provision in one of those bills that, and I don't know if I'm stating this right, that prohibited schools going to court with basically over that package of goods and what the legislature decided? You know what I mean?
I do. So that went away. There were budget amendments that were brought on that. Ultimately, the Senate adopted one of those, but it was adopted in different language. The bill, and there was an amendment brought up in 236 that would said the district could use no money. So that would include the money that's local revenues. So in education, well, in Sublette County, it's all local revenue, and we send money out. But in a lot of districts, they have local revenue, and then they get money in from the state. But at the very least, we all have what is called local revenue. And so that First Amendment would not have, you wouldn't have been able to sue based upon that. That was killed in the House and was killed in the bill. It was killed in a budget amendment. The Senate had it. In the compromise we made, it went away. So there's no...
Nothing addresses that.
Nothing addresses that. Schools can still sue with state money or local revenues if they feel like there's a...
So there's still a provision we could end up in another lawsuit?
Oh, yeah. You could still sue if you feel like you need to sue. Okay. Districts could.
There's 12 mills levied in this county for education. Am I correct?
There's more than that.
60.
There's 20. There's like 28, 40. And then there's another 12, and
there's 40 altogether.
40 all, yeah.
I think there's 40 mills. Yeah. I thought there was only 12. Where did I get that?
There are 12 state mills.
12 for the county.
I think there's 12 state mills, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so the state itself levies 12. Then there are local mills. Each district has a mill. The county has a school mill. And so there's, altogether, I think there's 40, I think. I have my notes on that.
I think it's about right, because our total mills run between about 65 and 68, depending on whether you live in town or out in the county. And by far the lion's share of it is school funding. Because we get charged with 12 mills for the county, we also pay into...
Boy.
All of the districts.
I don't know why. I guess I try to oversimplify things. I always said it was 12 mills. They're levying 12 mills.
Oh, way more than that.
Way more than that.
Yeah, they're statewide. Like I said, they're statewide mills that we use to plug the hole with the recapture districts. But, you know, that it's just not enough.
Look at your tax numbers. Does it break it down on that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then I should have looked.
And I think how this affects counties, right? We're funding counties right now, the extra money for counties out of Elizabeth. We have the last budget and the budget before that. So going into a new budget cycle next year, as we decide to spend more of the Elizabeth on education, what is that going to mean for local government? Mm-hmm. So there's going to be, and then also... Frankly, if we can't solve this and come up with another tax option, we will have to cut every other budget in the state of Wyoming more to satisfy education, depending upon what comes up.
Ergonomically.
I'll take that.
I see what I'm saying.
Ergonomically. Well, good luck with that.
Okay. We're adjourned, by the way. I'm not even going to take a motion.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just.